This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
But a regular home, according to the EPA, is about 40 tons of material in the average house. And so if we're doing even 50% of that, which is easy to accomplish day in and day out, we're keeping on average 20 tons, you know, from every project out of the house.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we have Congressman Jerry McNerney of California's 11th District, a former wind energy engineer who's helping build bridges to an America powered by clean energy. Then we hear from Ted Reif, whose nonprofit organization, The Reuse People, is a pioneer in the deconstruction industry, enabling cast-off materials to be reused in building projects around the country. Today on Sea Change Radio, building a sustainability infrastructure and creating a vision for sustainable building. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Representative Jerry McNerney, who's served as the congressman from California's 11th District since 2006. He's an engineer by training and, if I'm not mistaken, the only former wind energy executive member of Congress. Congressman McNerney, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here, and this is an area that I'm very excited to talk about, and I feel passionate about it.
Great. Well, why don't you first tell our listeners around the country why the 11th District of California is important in terms of commerce and resource issues?
Well, our district really lies in the Altamont Pass area, so there's a big wind energy resource. We have the transportation corridor between the Bay Area and the rest of the country, and we have quite a bit of Silicon Valley-type businesses in our region, computer companies and the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories there in Livermore produce a lot of scientific output. So it's a confluence of many things that come together to make our district or this district important in our nation's energy picture.
For anyone who's driven from San Francisco to LA on Interstate 5, you can't help but notice all these Congress created this Dust Bowl signs that are complaining about water diversion. And I assume this contains some of your constituents. Can you just briefly tell our listeners what the fuss is all about and what steps you'd like to see taken to fix the problem?
Well, sure. You know, we have the Delta is in my district, or quite a bit of it is. It's really a 5-county region that has the Delta. And the problem is that there's a lot more demand for the water than there's actual water to give out. And every additional bit of water we ship south or ship anywhere else lowers the quality of water in the Delta, and so it becomes unhealthy. We see declining populations of the native species. We see invasive species coming in, and so on. So we just need to be really careful about preserving the health of that Delta. It's one of the biggest estuaries on the West Coast. It's the biggest estuary on the West Coast, actually. It's a big economic engine for our region, and we need to share water, of course, but we need to make sure that we keep the Delta healthy. So there just needs to be a cooperative spirit in terms of deciding how to distribute water, when to distribute it, how much storage we need, and so on. And if any one region gets left out, particularly if our stakeholders get left out, it won't be a solution. It'll be a big fight. It'll end up in the courts. That's no way to do business. We need to sit down, and everybody needs to have a voice.
And what are some of the crankier voices saying right now?
Well, you know, there's high unemployment in that part of the world right now, in the West Valley and in the South Valley, and a lot of that has to do with the housing market and the bubble burst. There's always been high unemployment in those regions, and they seem to be blaming it on water so that they can get additional water transfers. And it's not entirely accurate to say that, but it certainly makes a good political story. So what we need to do is just be realistic, look at the science, make sure that if we do additional export, it's done when we have a sufficient water supply, on what years, and so on. So it's just something we need to work through and put those politics and gesturing aside and get into the real matter, and then I think we can come up with some solutions.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is Representative Jerry McNerney. He's the congressman from California's 11th District. Congressman, can you tell us a little bit about the three-pronged energy initiative you authored?
Well, sure. Back in the last Congress, back in last year, I had a part in the bill that was passed out of the House of Representatives to create more energy technology here and reduce greenhouse emissions. The part that I had was first the Green Act. It was a smaller bill that became a part of the large bill. And basically what that did was provided grants for educational institutions to work together with vocational training, with small businesses to produce curricula that would provide students the right skills for that local area. And I think that was a great part of the bill, and I was really proud of it because I'm so excited about education, about giving people the skills they need to compete in our very competitive world out there. The next thing I did was the Smart Grid Advancement Act. And basically, if you look at your grid, your electric grid, it's like a highway. There's times when there's not much traffic, and there's times when it's just bursting at the seams, and smart grid technology will actually allow people and encourage people to spread that use out over time, so it's not these short periods when the lines are bursting. And the last thing was the Vehicles for the Future Act, which really encouraged utilities to put in place the means for people to charge vehicles, and that's a whole technical story in itself. So that was, I think, a very big part. If we can transition to more electric vehicles that have good mileage, good performance. I mean, these electric vehicles, they perform as good or better than internal combustion engines. If we can get the range on those things, then boy, we can lower the cost of transportation for everybody, provide green jobs, and clean up this greenhouse emission issue quite a bit. So I was really excited about those three parts of our bill.
Following up on the Vehicles for the Future Act, finally, there's been a break in the CAFE standards after 20-something years of stagnancy. The CAFE standards, for people who don't know, is the fuel economy standards, which the U.S. lags sorely behind the rest of the industrial world. Do you think that your act, will that actually accelerate CAFE standards shifting, or is this a completely separate issue?
Well, it would. The bill didn't pass the Senate, so it didn't take effect, but This is a very important part of it. You know, if utility companies provide people the tools they need to be able to plug in their vehicles and get credit when the public utilities suck a little bit of that energy out during high load periods and give them low cost periods when they can charge their vehicles and everybody knows what everybody's doing, that's perfect. That's exactly what we need. We need people that have electric vehicles that have confidence that they're going to get credit for them, that they're going to get the low-cost electricity they need to run them, and so on. So it's a big part of it. And moving toward electric vehicles is a huge way for us to develop technology, for us to create jobs in this country. So I'm all for it.
And when you hear about something that just makes so much sense on so many levels, like this bill that you set forth getting shot down in the Senate, it gives us a lot of pauses and people scratch their head like, why can't we all get on the same page? But you're on the inside there. What's going on in Washington, do you think, that should have those of us who are looking for more renewable energy change feeling optimistic?
Well, we have some challenges, that's for sure. But I think we have an opportunity possibly this year with renewable energy standards and renewable portfolio standards, which basically encourage utility companies to buy more renewable power. And the problem with that is that some parts of the country feel like they don't have the resources, renewable resources to keep up, and they have to buy energy from California and Texas. But the truth is every part of the country has its own kind of resources. For example, the southeastern states can do biofuels, terrific climate for that. Of course, in the West, we have solar, we have wind in some areas, and so on. So every part of the country has its own resource-rich environment, and that's what I want to encourage is every local and sector of the country developing its own resources and its own electricity, and that's where we need to go.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Congressman Jerry McNerney from California's 11th District. I noticed in your Smart Grid Advancement Act that it provides for the strengthening of the Energy Star program, which we actually covered on Sea Change Radio not so long ago. Listeners can go to seachangeradio.com and go in the archives and listen to that piece. But I noticed that in the recently proposed Republican budget, it called for really severe cuts to the program. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I mean, we do have to consider the budget situation. We can't continue to run up debt. But what I'd like to see is investment in technology that pays back. If we're going to spend money to help stimulate the economy, then that money ought to go into something that's going to create revenues in the future or will pay for itself in one way or another. And I think this is a terrific way to do that, is to make sure that we have more energy efficiency, because that will help us create technology to become more energy efficient. And if the market here, again, is in this country, the production of that equipment will be in this country. So that means jobs. Of course, jobs and businesses mean more revenue to the government. So I think that's a way that we can very wisely invest in our future and get the reward for that investment later on.
Your district, for those of us who don't live there, the 11th District, it was held by a man dubbed an eco-thug by the Sierra Club, Richard Pombo, for 14 years. How does a guy like you, who has a forward-thinking environmental record, and you're the author of a book that's coming out this summer called Clean Energy Nation, how does someone like you take that district?
Well, you know, Alex, the district is, it's a moderate district. It's not a radical conservative or liberal district. It's a moderate district, and I'm really a moderate person in most ways, and as they say, all politics is local. It's a matter of meeting with constituents, of making myself available as much as possible, listening to people's ideas, and doing the best I can for my district in every way, having great constituent services, and just making it personal. And I think that's the key to being a good representative, is to be there for the district that you represent, and that's what I think I've done as well as I have in a very a district that could be challenging to either party, really.
When I hear people talking about liberal or conservative, I still, those labels are head-scratchers to me in a lot of ways. When you hear about, like, being pro-gun is a conservative issue, to me it's like not having guns in your house seems like that's kind of conservative to me. I don't want people out there, but it's a topsy-turvy world we live in somehow in terms of labels.
Yeah, it sure is. And when you try to label other people or label yourself, you're really limiting yourself. And I think that's not, you know, it's not in your interest. It's not in the people's interest that you're trying to represent.
Well, we look forward to reading about your book, which comes out, I guess, this summer, Clean Energy Nation. My guest has been Jerry McNerney. He's a congressman from California's 11th District. Congressman, we hope you can come back when the book comes out. We'd love to follow up with you when some of your thoughts on energy and environment have been laid out in book form for our audience.
Good, and I hope it's inspiring. It's going to come out on Earth Day this April. And really, it's a lot of stories about things that have happened in this country and our history that have transformed our way of thinking and our way of life, and just showing that going to renewable energy and clean energy can be in that category, which will transform our country, which will create jobs, and is really the way to the future. And if we don't take steps to help develop clean energy and continue along the same path, the risks are going to be increasingly greater.
Representative Jerry McNerney, he's the congressman from California's 11th District. He's also a former wind energy engineer. Congressman, thanks for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Alex.
There's a party. Everyone is there. Everyone will leave at exactly the same time. It's hot to imagine that nothing at all could be so exciting, could be so much fun.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Ted Reif. He's the president and co-founder of The Reuse People, which is a nonprofit organization out of Oakland, California. Ted, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it, Alex.
Tell us what The Reuse People is all about.
We started a little over 17 years ago, and our mission is to keep reusable building materials out of the landfill. Throughout the United States, EPA estimates are that in the low end, 25%, and the high end, 50% of all solid municipal waste is construction and demolition materials.
Why don't you deconstruct the deconstruction industry for us and contrast how the reuse people would deconstruct a building versus the traditional methods?
Sure. Deconstruction by its nature, meaning just the reverse of construction, is taking a building apart board by board, brick by brick, door by door, window by window, with the object being to save the maximum amount of materials we can for reuse. If they can't be reused, it's broken or it's rotten, maybe it can get recycled. So that would be the second choice. But our first choice is to salvage materials for reuse. And that requires time. Typically, if a bulldozer or an excavator can demolish a house in 2 days, it would take us 10 to 15 days to deconstruct it by hand. Crew of five people working 8 hours a day for two and a half weeks would have the building taken apart and the materials delivered. So it is very hand intensive. It's very labor intensive. And because of that, it actually costs substantially more money, just because of the amount of labor that's involved, as opposed to just one day with an excavator and throwing it away.
And in terms of the costs, how would somebody hire the reuse people as opposed to a traditional deconstruction company?
In the state of California, we are licensed statewide as a demolition and house moving. That's what our license falls under. There is no separate license for deconstruction. So someone who's looking to build a new house or even to do a remodel might find us on the internet. They might find us in the phone book, and they say, wow, let's investigate this deconstruction opportunity. And we would give them a bid just like any other contractor would, and we're insured and bonded and all that sort of thing. And we would go out and deconstruct the house. Now, the two big problems with deconstruction are that it costs more and it takes more time, which is why we set up the corporation to be a nonprofit organization in the beginning, because all the materials that we salvage from a project actually represent then to the homeowner a tax-deductible donation. So that we receive those, we work with appraisers. IRS guidelines are that most deconstruction projects require an independent IRS qualified appraiser to value the materials that are being donated to us. So we have a list of those IRS qualified appraisers that we turn over to the homeowner and let them choose their own. And so the materials are received by us. We do the deconstruction. The materials are received by us, and an independent appraiser appraises the value.
Are there more for-profit organizations, companies that are starting to get in line with the model that the reuse people have created and starting to reuse and recycle more of their materials in the deconstruction process?
There are. I mean, deconstruction itself is an age-old environment. It's been going on ever since we've had houses, it's been going on for thousands of years. It's only become, let's say, a contemporary activity probably since about 1985, 1990. What we have done in order to expand the opportunity of salvaging more material is we are training for-profit contractors to do the deconstruction to our specifications. This is, again, keeping more people employed. It's also having more salespeople out there for us, hyping the advantages of deconstruction. And so we've trained about 50, 60 for-profit contractors around the country to do deconstruction to our specifications. In addition, there are a lot of other for-profit contractors, and have been for years, who are salvaging the architectural artifacts. They're not going after the common materials that we might, like hollow core slab doors or just 2x4s, but they're going after cornices and corbels and high-value items. And those people have been very active for many years in the United States.
And I know that there's probably a pretty active black market for products. Like, I know that there's been a lot of vandalism related to copper as that price went up. Maybe has that diverted a lot of reusable materials from projects that you'd be working on usually?
Yeah, it has. In matter of fact, even new construction. I was just on a project up in Seattle and talking to a new contractor that had just closed the house in, but all the copper wiring and plumbing was stripped out by vandals. Also, the police in many major metropolitan cities are looking at the architectural salvage materials that are stolen, and there's literally an underground economy working in that because of their value. It's like artwork. Leaded glass windows, you know, those kind of things, which have, you know, $300, $400, $500, $1,000, $2,000 values.
And even though they're buying it, this could be recycled. At least it's being reused.
People are not reused.
It's not being put into the landfill.
That's so right.
At least it's being part of some economy, even if it's a black market one, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that is just part of the ecological system.
Work on the building too. I'm working on the building. I'm working on the building. I'm working on the building. For my Lord. It's a Holy Ghost building. It's a Holy Ghost building. Holy Ghost building.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Ted Reif. He's the founder of a nonprofit building deconstruction organization called the Reuse People. Ted, how would somebody use the Reuse People in the deconstruction of their home?
Well, typically, once we have settled and gone out and given the bid, and the owner has checked with their accountant and make sure that the tax donation is going to work, and they're satisfied with that step, and we're hired to do the job. Oftentimes, and much more recently than it has in the early days when we started, homeowners are asking to even keep some of the materials on site to be reused back into the project. For instance, there's a barn up in Napa that we recently quoted on, and the owner wants us to take the barn down, but he wants to keep the vast majority of the lumber for the new house that they're building because they want to replane the lumber, remill it, and use it as siding, use it as paneling, and other decorative ornaments on the house. So we're finding that to be quite common, that some of those materials will be retained, even though we've deconstructed it. But the owner says, look, I want to keep all the siding, or I want to keep all the plumbing fixtures, or I want to keep all the doors or something. So they're reusing those elements immediately back into their house. What we've done over the 17 years that we've been in business, we do have statistics that show that to date, we have diverted over 275,000 tons of material from the landfill that normally would have been in the landfill, and now they've been put back into market somewhere for reuse by not only existing homeowners, but by future homeowners and people doing their own remodeling and customers just coming to our warehouse and buying those materials.
Ted, do you have any idea about the breakdown of what percentage of materials are reused or recycled in your deconstruction business?
It's a good question, a good point. Typically, and it will vary from the type of building, but in Northern California, where we have a lot of homes which are wood-sided, our diversion rates and the quantity of materials that we're able to keep out of the landfill approaches 75% to 80% of the total project, and even higher. We have one instance where we did a commercial building for the Air Force, in which we had a 99.7%. Or reuse and salvage out of it. In Southern California, which has a lot of stucco houses, and stucco is a throwaway material, unfortunately. It's painted, it can't be reused, very difficult to recycle, especially with the paint that's on it. So what happens is that's a throwaway, and that goes against the percentages of salvage. But in those cases in Southern California with stucco houses, we're probably around 60%. 65%. So it's still a considerable number, considering that not the concrete of a house, but a regular home, according to the EPA, the thing you live in, and again, not the foundation in the driveway, is about 40 tons of material in the average house. And so if we're doing even 50% of that, which is easy to accomplish day in and day out, we're keeping on average 20 tons, you know, from every project out of the house. And the EPA estimates that those numbers are based on a house that's between 2,000 and 2,500 square feet, which is also the average size house of that's being demolished every year. According to the EPA, 250,000 houses, single-family dwellings, are being demolished every year.
Well, if somebody were going to, since you do take them down, and some, let's say somebody's building a new house or doing a remodel, since you look at these materials on the other side of the supply chain, what would you recommend to people out there who are thinking of doing a addition to their home in terms of materials? What materials do you want to stay away from? You already mentioned stucco is kind of something that can't really be reused. It's a throwaway, as you said. What are some of the better materials from in terms of their environmental impact and their reusability?
Well, certainly the biggest one is lumber. Any stick of lumber, dimensional lumber that's 6 feet long or longer, we're going to keep, and it doesn't have termites in it.
And it doesn't matter if it's been from virgin forests or this has been three houses in the recycling process.
That's right. And we've had many that have been. We've taken down barns where we have seen, especially barns where we have seen that the guy has used that lumber two or three different times just because of the nicks and the old nails in it and that sort of thing.
That's great.
Yeah. So there is probably the after lumber, doors, windows, and cabinets are the most demanded anyway from a marketplace standpoint, and our customers are doors, windows, and cabinets. So lumber is always first, and then doors, windows, and cabinets. Electrical fixtures come next, flooring, trim work. There's not much, and appliances.
And besides shopping at the Reuse People's Warehouse, what are some of the best ways for people to connect to your organization?
Well, certainly they can go on to see exactly what we're doing. We've got an active website, which is www.thereusepeople.org. And we also have another website because we do a tremendous amount of training of underemployed and unemployed people around the country and with community colleges. We have another website, which is www.deconstructiontraining.org. So they can certainly find us through there. We are always looking for contractors who want to come over from the dark side, as we say, and rather than throw materials away to salvage materials, we're always looking for contractors to join us. And we accept donations. We don't have to get materials from projects that we do. People can bring their spare toilets, their bathtub, their doors, their kitchen cabinets to us. And assuming that they're in reusable condition, we'll take them. And they get a tax donation for it.
Well, it's a unique and very innovative solution to a problem that a lot of us don't think about. And we appreciate you taking the time to walk us through it. Ted Reif, the president and co-founder of the Reuse People, thanks for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks very much, Alex. I appreciate the opportunity.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by The Meters, Jimmy Scott, and Hot Rise. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Sungevity Home Solar Specialists. Go to Sungevity.com to learn more. Check out our website at SeaChangeRadio.com. That's SEAChangeRadio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.